Here.
Director Blackburn.
Here.
President Guerrero.
I'm present.
Vice President Lucy.
Here.
Director White.
Here.
All members are present. Mr. Ogren is present. District Legal Counsel is present. If you'll join me for the flag salute.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks for the cinnamon stuff.
The next item will be the agenda review. I don't have any changes. Does anybody else have any changes or to it? I will note that we do have an amended
accounts payable.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
All right. There's no changes. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. All right, carries by a vote of 5-0. The next item is public comment for matters not on the agenda. We did have one request. Is that for matters on the agenda or not on the agenda, Mr. Ogren? Oh, Ms. McGrath.
It's not on the agenda.
Is that Mr. McKenzie?
Yes.
All right. Good evening, sir. Wait, your mic's off. Can we get you to turn that on? There's a little button on the base.
Right.
All right, now you're on.
Is that good?
That is.
Okay.
Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. As I stated, I'm Alan McKenzie. I live at 2310 Beach Street, Oceano. Thank you for hearing me. That's next door to the fire event, which happened on August 22nd, which raised questions about fire response in Oceano. Since then, I think it's important to point out that as a result of the attention this event got, that and I would like to commend this public servant in the public forum, Grover Beach Commander John Peters asked for a review of protocol and procedures in the Grover Beach dispatch, which has been reported could shave up to a minute off of response time. I think that's substantial. I think this is the gold standard of public service. When this event was brought to his attention, he unflinchingly, openly absorbed it, asked the question, can we do better? Answered himself, yes, and called for a review of the situation. So I think community involvement does pay, and I think in this situation that's clear. Secondly, I had a conversation with Ken Willett of the National Fire Protection Association. I want to just give small highlights. One's important, though. And I put to him, there was a little rounding off when it was put to him, like around 8 minutes. And these standards are written in minutes and seconds, so I don't think rounding off is a viable thing. So I put to him the initial reported call time of 8 minutes and 32 seconds and asked him if that was the time, actual time, would he still respond that they met the overall response threshold? He said they were towards the outer edge, maybe a little bit over. Now, to quote, made up for precious minutes that ticked off during the extended call handling. So he was very adamant about that. So I think our Five Cities Fire Authority should be commended for that. I think it should be done in a public forum. I'd like to do that here. But I do not think that should obscure the fact that we can surmise that our firefighters don't necessarily like being put in that situation. And based on my conversation with them, they don't. So I think there's more work to be done here. And I would, I would like to address one thing that keeps, it's a statement that keeps cropping up in my discussions about this. It's a statement that keeps getting used in the media. And I think it's important to clarify this. The statement is the standard having been met. Excuse me. This is one event. The standard is a series of events. And Mr. Willett made this very clear to me. The standard is written as a series of events. So what it says in 90% of cases, the call time should be a minute 45 seconds. In 99, it should never exceed, in 99% of cases, it should never exceed 2 minutes and 40 seconds. He clarified, asked him specifically if that's how it should be read. He clarified and answered in the affirmative, yes, which means in 100 events, 90 of them should be handled, the call time, in a minute 45 seconds. In 99 of them, they should never exceed 240. And we have this event, which is very clear, the one mulligan, where they did. So that begs the question, what happened in the previous 99 events? We have some input that maybe this has happened before. So I don't think it's a leap to say that our call, our dispatch, our call handling is not meeting the standard of the National Fire Protection Association. We need to follow up. So what I will do here to end is remind the community and the board, if you will, that on September 19th at 2 p.m. in the Grover Beach City Council Chambers, there will be a meeting of the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, of which I'm informed this will be a, if not the, topic. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Is there any other public comment this evening? Ms. Tacker, good evening.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker, and I first wanted to kind of ask about tonight's format. You have a presentation and a hearing item, and I would like to be able to participate in both of those in addition to the regular items that we generally see on your houses for the CEQA document on Monday the 15th. And I had hoped to hear from your board some sort of official weigh-in on the impacts of the event to the district. I have heard many times in the past that the OHV impacts the district and you don't receive the benefits of the OHV, but I'd like to see those articulated in some comments related to the event. And again, that deadline is Monday, and I don't know how you do that, giving your staff direction to put pen to paper and get a letter out. The other item, I think I just wanted to celebrate the rich history of Oceano, and the hobo hubbub is kind of a funny thing to the community, and I just know that your board and you people who actually live in Oceano are very aware that the hobo event is a common occurrence in Oceano, and that the events at the depot are again a celebration of the history of Oceano, and I just want to side with you on that. My last comment is some weeks ago the Plant Source and Viva Farms activity up in Napomo, half of it was split off and sent here to Oceano, and I just wanted to know if that is impacting your district, if it's impacting your community to have what at one time was said some 60 trucks a day, which I think would be a visible impact. I drove by there today. There wasn't any trucks there when I went by, so I don't see that there is an impact. So I don't quite understand what all the fuss in Napomo was if there's no relief by opening an outlet here in Oceano. So maybe you know more than I.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Is there any other Is there any other public comment this evening? All right, we'll close public comment. Move on to the special presentation, which is from Jeff Lee, San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department. This is on the status of the Arroyo Grande Creek Waterway Management Program, funding and permits, and we do have a slideshow. There is a printed copy in the back if anybody wants to review it. Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening. I am Jeff Lee with your County Public Works Department, and I think Mr. Ogren is going to turn off the light. Through the Coastal Commission, and we're into right-of-way, and we anticipate being under construction approximately this time next year with that project. Annual vegetation management is currently ongoing. The goats are complete. Their activities are complete. We are doing vegetation management through trimming and other activities. Currently, they are about halfway done, should be done in another 7 to 10 days with that. Flap gate, you'll see hoist replacement. We did just go out for an RFP, and that project to basically rebuild the hoist at the flap gates at Sand Canyon, anticipated to be complete by October 15th. And then reed management, something that happened in 2012, and anticipate at some point in the future, permit depending, may happen again. I'm going to kind of go through these slides really quick. I apologize for the color. Diversion, Los Barros Diversion Creek, Arroyo Grande Creek. Obviously, Oceano to the north, Ag Fields and Oceano to the south. The improvements, actually, let me just go to this slide. That doesn't give you a whole lot of better definition. Apologize. Actually, it's in the handout, so we'll go to this one, which hopefully will make a little bit more sense for you. The alternate 3A consists of vegetation removal, sediment removal, raising of the levees to a certain position, and interlocking concrete blocks. The vegetation and the sediment removal are actually done within the creek itself, so we are going to be doing activities in the creek. And the reason for that is when the levees were built in the late 50s, the design's flow through that was approximately 100 years. Currently, we have about a 4.6-year flood event that will stay within the creek channel. Otherwise, it will escape the channel and go out into the surrounding fields. So the alternate 3A is one of the funding sources. That's the Prop 1E through the state of California. It provides 10-year protection plus 2 feet of freeboard. So it is in addition to the 10-year flow. So you will get approximately somewhere about a 25-year flood protection with regards to that. Then the modified 3C adds another foot or 2 feet, depending upon the location, and it's flood control walls, some levee top stabilization to allow for maintenance activities, increase the width to approximately 12 to 15 feet, and then exterior erosion control mats on the exterior so that and basically the reason for the difference in flood heights between the 3 to 4 foot flood protection to the north, and the 2 feet is anticipated to be 2016 with completion in 2017. One of the issues with that timing, I'll explain in just a second, with regards to permitting. But it is approximately a $9 million project. We are currently fully funded through a series of three mechanisms, $5 million in state grants, which is the Prop 1E and the Prop 84 funds through the Department of Water Resources, a $1.9 million hazardous mitigation grant through FEMA, and then a $2.1 million USDA loan USDA. Excuse me. Those funding sources are secure. The next series of slides are going to show you effectively what we're doing. This is a view from 22nd Street, just south the creek, just south of 22nd Street, facing to the north. So this is a 1999 photo. You'll notice the north levee, south levee, and very, very few trees. If you've been out there recently, you'll notice a lot more trees. So in 2001, there was a flood event, and then the south levee did breach further to the closer to the ocean, further to the west. But we basically had a bank-to-bank filling of the levee. So then if you look at conditions today, so actually this is actually a 2012 photo of that same view from the 22nd Street Bridge. You can see a lot of vegetation, a lot of habitat has grown up. And one of the reasons that habitat has grown up is because of permitting restrictions and maintenance restrictions through various Department of Fish and Game, Regional Water, Army Corps, and so forth, and that's part of the permitting process that we're going through with this current project. So next couple projects, this is again from 22nd Street. What we're going to do is to remove some sediment, provide a secondary channel, and then do some vegetation maintenance on either side so that we can increase the flow while still maintaining that habitat for fish, for birds, for other species. So here's a picture of the residential areas, this being the north levee. So what we're going to do, and I should say on the south levee, that's where you get the 10-year flow plus 2 feet of protection. And then on this side, the levee top gets 3 feet, and then we add an approximately 1 foot wall behind the residential development there to provide them with actually 4 feet of freeboard. So the service, NOAA, National Marine Fisheries, and then California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Then after we get all of those permits, we get to go back to the California Coastal Commission and get their final sign off before we can go into right-of-way and then construction. So in the meantime, we are going to continue the vegetation maintenance program that you've seen for the last number of years. The reason that the Army Corps is so critical in all of this is that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife are going to have the predominant conditions of approval that need to be maintained for fish and wildlife habitat. They aren't able to talk to each other until the Army Corps releases that those consultation letters. We started this project in 2009. We've been working and coordinating with the Army Corps, and those letters are still yet to be forthcoming. So there's the responsiveness that we're hoping to achieve. We have solicited help through various agencies, Secretary Laird with the state of California, also with Supervisor Sajian, and then all the way on up to Congresswoman Capps. And so we're hopefully the timing is starting to move forward and starting to progress further and faster. But as they say, the proof is in the pudding, and we don't have pudding yet. So if you are so inclined and want to contact any of the gentlemen or the ladies involved in the permitting process, Dave Castanon is the head of the Ventura office. I've given you his name and phone number. Tamara Anderson, you may remember her as Tamara Presser, if you've had dealings with the regional board. She's the local permit authority for the regional board. And then Linda Connolly is the contact for Department of Fish and Wildlife. And with that, I am available for any questions.
I don't have any at this point. Pablo, do you have any questions you want to? Okay.
I have
Go
one.
Ahead, Karen.
Because I wasn't paying enough attention. How far upstream does this go?
Oh, I apologize. I should have said that. The project starts at the Century Lane Bridge and goes approximately down to the Delta Street Triangle just south of the of the airport, so almost to the Guyton crossing.
Century Bridge. Which one is that?
Actually, if you look on your slides, if you look on page,
is it Alexiana Place?
It's off of. Say again?
Halcyon Highway 1, correct?
No, it's actually beyond that. So it's we go above Halcyon and Highway 1 and then bridge. And so it from driving over the top of it, you may not have realized that it's a bridge, but
no.
There is water that does go through it when there is water.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. This is coming down as far as the airport.
Yes.
The area from there down to the outlet. Are we going to get anything done there? Because that's a big problem on that levee there with people and the things that they're planning on doing. But it also has that little crest of people that live down there that get flooded all the time by the sanitation district on Maui Court, I think it is.
Actually, this project deals with the area inside the levees. And so the area from Delta Street South actually has enough capacity within the creek itself in order to take the water down, to take the water to the ocean. By the time it starts to overtop the levees there, it will actually be going into the fields further north. The first overtopping point is going to be approximately the Highway 1 bridge. And so with the amount of water constrained within the levees, that reach actually has adequate capacity.
I have one more thing. With the lagoon that runs into the creek where the flap gate is there,
mm-hmm.
Is that thing going to be is working now and is going to stay functional?
It'll stay functional. The hoist replacement is there was some pitting and so forth on the structural supports, and so we're basically rebuilding that. But the intent is to have it back in service by October 15th, the start of the anticipated rainy season.
Okay, because my concern is all that lagoon area in there is now just solid reeds and gunk, and you know people are walking across it now. It's gotten so bad. If that backs up in there and you don't have a clear enough flow to get it through the flood gates, we may end up with more additional flooding on the lagoon side, right off of Laguna, which I live down on Laguna, but into the sanitation, into Maui, into all that area there. So that concerns me also because none of that's been dredged.
And I'll say something sensitive, then the board chair and your general manager can stop me if I go slightly too far. That is actually state park property.
Yeah, I know.
So,
yeah. So. Has there been any negotiations to work with them on that?
There's been ongoing discussions,
okay.
So but nothing formal. So
okay.
has been completed.
That's what I told him the other day. Good luck. Owners along the creek, and unfortunately,
people voted to just dump it on the people who live on the creek. And so I was wondering if there's an accounting of that assessment, because it was collected from all the property owners for over 10 years.
And I don't have that personally with me, obviously, tonight. That would be a Zone 11A question. And I know there's a...
Are we talking about Zone 11A?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is the benefit for this is Zone 1 and 1A. The money's collected through that is actually not the collateral, but the payback for the USDA loan. So, but the from a budget standpoint, the what's been collected and what's been paid out, I would direct you towards the Zone 1A advisory group.
Okay, I think the community would like to know how that money was utilized and how it's going to contribute to future water issues. Secondly, is I want to piggyback on what Lori said. I live right down off about a block off the creek as well, and the tules are so thick, and you're not really going much further past the 22nd Street Bridge. The railroad trestle is so low now because there's so much sediment under it that you now have to almost bend to get underneath it, where before it was, you had a good 12 feet clearance to walk underneath that railroad trestle. Now it's you got to bend down to get down there. But also too is you have quite a substantial population living in the creek bed itself, in areas that aren't being cleaned. And although I do applaud you for putting a goat out there, but they don't do very good on garbage, you know. And so that debris is going to be very, very problematic, and I can only see penalties and fines coming down that if that water does start flowing, hopefully, it'll flow, but all that debris is going to flow too, and it's going to be considered a health hazard because there's so much of it. There's years and years of buildup, you know, and then also too is the waterways of what little water is perking at certain points in that creek. The gophers have just, not the gophers, but the beavers have just rerouted the waterways, and so the water now trickles over into the tules and then back over and trickles into the lagoon. And that's really a hot spot. Do you have any plans for, and I know that there's a bunch of permits and this agency and that agency you have to go through, but
judging or anything of that nature.
And the populations that are living down in the creek bed?
That is going to be a sheriff's issue. When we do go down there, and actually we do have a don't go alone, bring a buddy policy when you do go down into the Arroyo Grande Creek. When we do see activity and when we do see debris, we do alert the sheriff's department for that.
So let me get this right. You guys don't go down alone, right?
Correct.
But the residents... It's safe for us. Is that what you're saying, Jeff?
That's not my place to say that. So
not to put it that way, but you realize that it's a problem. If you're going down in doubles, right, you know, just to clean up debris, it's a problem for the people who live here. And yes, it probably is a sheriff's issue, but I'm telling you because, you know, it's the zone.
Okay. And I will relay the comments to the Zone 1A representative.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sure. Thank you.
Great presentation.
Thank you very much.
I have one more
Carrie,
little question.
Another question, please.
Yeah. Do you do any work in squirrel eradication?
Not actively. So the at the moment, with regards to...
the levee.
Within the levee. We do... again, not actively. We are actually looking at possible owl houses and trying to figure out if permitting wise that is a possible benefit. But currently, we don't actively have any program for that.
Yeah, because I was down there about 6 months ago, and there was an area where there was so many squirrels and squirrel holes in the levee. I said to myself, "Well, that's not going to hold up against any water."
It's funny you said that because we had two squirrels running down the strand 2 days ago. Watching,
yeah.
I'm going, what's that?
Well, there must have been 20, 25 of them.
Yeah,
there.
They're out and about.
Over by over and the levee, past the railroad bridge by the Cardoza home.
Okay.
Just Tons of them.
Tons of them.
All right. Thank you. I don't have any questions.
Make the levy into a sieve.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
I'll take public comment on the special presentation. Does anybody have public comment this evening on this? Ms. Tacker?
Does this go against my
no.
six? Thank you.
No.
The money's been spent year after year after year in developing the plan or buying a goat or, you know, whatever. Where's that money gone all this time? But it seems to me that over all this time that you wouldn't have to borrow a whole $2.1 million, that there should be some reserve in the Zone 11A fund. And that was it. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Is there any other public comment? Oh. If you have a quick response, sure, Mr. Lee. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Just a quick response to Ms. Tacker is yes, the current allocation of funding is to the maintenance activities ongoing, and then once the construction project is complete, then obviously those activities will get transitioned into either the payment of the bond and or the continuing ongoing maintenance. Mm-hmm. So I don't have the information off the top of my head with regards to the amount of reserves.
Okay, thank you. Move on to the report.
Go ahead,
please.
Guerrero, there is concerns about the assessment and getting an accounting of the taxation of those properties and, mm-hmm. and how that money was utilized. And so if we could get some follow-up on that, that would really be very, very helpful. And I know it's a Zone 11A issue, but I see it as an accounting issue and an accountability for people's dollars.
Sure.
So can we have some follow-up?
And
Pablo, how would you suggest that we...
I'll make sure to do the follow-up. And then later today, we under future agenda items, maybe we can... focus on that a little bit more, too.
Okay. That sounds good.
Thank you.
We don't have anybody from Sheriff's South Station, so we'll move on to item 7B, which is Five Cities Fire Authority. Ricky Heath is here. Good evening, Chief Heath.
Good evening, Honorable Directors, President Guerrero, Ricky Heath, Five Cities. First, I would like to share with you the stats for this month. I haven't done that in a while, so I figured it'd be good to catch up. Within the past month, we've ran 286 calls. 85 of those calls came out of the Oceano Fire Station. And we also provided 38 automatic aid calls to CAL FIRE. That is 13% of and spread from that. We also responded to two accidents out on the Oceano Dunes involving ATVs during the month of August and one broken arm out in the Oceano Dunes. And then we also went to the Beach Street structure fire on August 21st and a vehicle accident involving a semi-trailer and a domestic vehicle out off of Halcyon in the county area. We also sent engine companies out to the strike team assignments up at the LR fire up by Reading and also to the Junction fire at Oakhurst. And that's all I have for stats.
Mr. McKenzie's concerns are well taken by this board, I think, about the dispatch times and responses.
Yes.
That's on the agenda then for September 19th at the Five Cities Fire Authority board meeting?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So are you going to come back and report to us on this? Or because it's a system that needs to be rectified.
Right. Yes, I was planning on coming back and reporting what came of the fire board meeting, but I would also allow Director White to do the same thing. She's the representative for the Oceano board. But I do have some information that, if you would like, I'm prepared to provide some information tonight.
Please.
If you'd like.
Okay. Great.
First, I wanted to start out with a little history regarding dispatch for Five Cities Fire Authority. On February 4th, Grover Beach became our sole dispatch center. That was when the city of Rio Grande decided to go to the Sheriff's Department for dispatch for law enforcement. And so because of that, five cities by default went to Grover Beach. Before that, five cities was being dispatched by two different dispatch centers, which created a lot of confusion. And and so we were being dispatched by both Rio Grande and Grover Beach. And also Oceano Fire Department, before the formation of five cities, they've always been dispatched by Grover Beach. And to this date, you know, this station is still dispatched by Grover. Also, close to February 4th, the Five Cities Fire Authority, we were in Grover Beach to another dispatch center, for example, CAL FIRE. It would cost us anywhere to $253,367 just to move the MDC program. And then also, right now, Grover Beach is charging us $32 per call. And I look back from this date back 1 year, and as of right now, we are running 3,447 calls, and that costs us $110,000 for Grover Beach to provide us the dispatch service. As for if we were to go to CAL FIRE, which I was informed, they charge $45 per call, and with the 3,447 calls right now, we would be paying up to $186,138. So there's a significant cost difference, and also the cost just to transfer from one dispatch center to another. Also, the other thing that I just wanted to bring to mind is, even though if we go to CAL FIRE for dispatch, if a 911 call was to come in through cell phone, it's still going to have to get transferred somehow, because most calls go directly to CHP and they have to figure it out and determine where that call needs to go to. And the other concern that I have as the interim fire chief for five cities is right now we're running over 400 automatic aid calls to CAL FIRE, and if we decide to use CAL FIRE for dispatch, we could very well end up running a larger number of automatic aid calls. So that's also another issue. If our engines are out in the county area and we get a structure fire here, there could be another delay in dispatch or delay in response to one of our incidents within our communities. We've had our relationship with Grover Beach Dispatch has been excellent ever since we've gone over there on February 4th. We work great together. We're always working in collaboration to try to provide the best level of service possible. So just wanted to express that.
Thank you, Rick. I saw that Chief Copsey was here from the Grover Beach Police Department. Obviously, they have the dispatch services that we're utilizing. Does Chief Copsey want to add anything to the discussion regarding the dispatch? And one of the things that I noted when I had a chance to review the...
I want to thank the opportunity, President, for allowing me to say a few words. And I do want to thank Mr. McKenzie for actually staying on top of this, because we do need input from the community on this. My position is this, because, you know, Chief Heath has mentioned a number of things, and we, you just have my assurance and our city's assurance that our dispatching will continue to be the best dispatching that we have. We continually look at our procedures and processes on, I don't want to say every call, but just about every call, we constantly look at how we're doing things. So this was something that before Mr. McKenzie brought it and had questions, we were already looking at. And as he mentioned, my commander, John Peters, actually spent quite a bit of time looking into this and working with not only the county dispatch, the sheriff's dispatch, but CAL FIRE dispatch as well as CHP dispatch. Dispatching in our county is very complex because we have so many agencies involved. And some may say that shouldn't be that way because it should be one agency. Well, it doesn't work that way because of the 911 calls that go into from the different cities. The county actually is a hub. If you give me a minute on some history, the county is actually a hub for all AT&T 911 lines. hard lines, not cell phone. So any 911 call in any city first goes to the county, and then it's split out from there to the respective PSAPs, which are the dispatch centers. It's usually instantaneously, so nobody knows the difference when they call. Sometimes there's tie-ups in the phone if there's a lot of calls. In this case, there was 40 calls, I think, on the hard lines, or quite a few calls. So if somebody gets a busy signal, it's not because, you know, the dispatch center, there's a problem. It's because there's so many 911 calls, and it's through AT&T, and there's some, you know, you can be assured that the calls are getting through because somebody's called first is usually what happens. We only have so many lines that AT&T does. If a call, 911 landline call comes from Oceano, it goes to the county dispatch center. And then depending on the type of call, whether it's police, fire, or medical, it gets transferred out from there. So if it's fire, it immediately or close to immediately is the plan to come directly to Grover Beach and we dispatch fire. It's worked that way for 15 plus years, and we've been operating and dispatching for the fire, Oceano Fire District, and now the Five Cities Fire District for many years. All comes in. And in this case, the cell phones in this area 90% of the time or 99% of the time will go to CHP. That's just what's set up. It's that way all throughout California and other states. And then they take that information and will dispatch it out to the appropriate dispatch center, whether it's ours, whether it's fire, whether it's medical or police. In this case, CHP took the information. They take time to find out where the call is, and they actually sent the call to CAL FIRE thinking that it was county jurisdiction, when in fact it should have come to our dispatch. So that was one of the first delays. And to address the delay on that, yes, that's a mistake that was happened and it shouldn't have. And we've identified that actually early on in the process, and we've met with the people in charge. And we actually have a new protocol that all of those will be identified as best as possible and sent to Grover Beach Dispatch if that's the case. One of the problems is CHP has old mapping, and their mapping process may or may not identify the correct location. So, you know, we're hoping that will be taken care of with the cell phones. CAL FIRE, once the call went to CAL FIRE, they, of course, did the information and then identified as soon as they could that it was actually a Five Cities Fire call, and they also sent it to Grover Beach. By that time, we had gotten landlines directed to us from the county. So there was about a little over 2 minute delay from the time the first call went in to when Grover Beach Dispatch actually got the information and dispatched from there. So we've identified a few things in our own dispatch center that we could speed things up once we get the call. So this actually has benefit, you know, in this analysis, we've actually identified specifically one area where when we tone out the fire department, we actually are able to send the information, the technology we have now, we can actually send the information immediately to their cell phones, pagers, to the station while the tone is going on, because the tone ties up the actual radio service. So the verbal won't come until, you know, 15, 20, 30 seconds later, depending on the tone. So we've identified that we can actually, we've changed procedures, and we've identified that we can do that. So we've actually put into place already some pretty good tools, I guess, to actually streamline some of the information, not only in our dispatch, but also with CHP and working with them. And I will mention that the county side of it, they did a pretty good job. I think it was like 40 seconds to where they first got their call to identify what it was, and then it came to Grover Beach. It goes to CHP. Some of the cell phone calls are identified. They will go, if it's in the city, will go to the city dispatch. So if it's in Grover Beach, it will go to Grover Beach, but it's rare. Usually they still go to CHP, and then it will go to whatnot. And the reason we can't have all... there's other reasons why we can't have all the calls go directly to Grover Beach or county or CAL FIRE, wherever it is because there's different aspects of the call. We don't know, when somebody calls 911, we don't know what type of call that is, whether it's fire, police, or medics. And each one has a different location where they're going to need to send that call to be dispatched. So that's why the hub works in the county and in each city. The difficult part is because we are, you know, we do work really well cooperatively together. Because of that, the transferring is going to happen no matter where the dispatch is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that we've been very happy inside being able to serve the city of Oceano, the community district, with our dispatch center for many years and hope to for the future. And any questions, and Mr. McKenzie has been great in bringing up questions. We want to address those questions and things that come up. And I will mention, too, that Ricky and his crew have been excellent in working on some of the details with their mobile computing as with the technology stuff that happens there. So I'll be happy to answer questions if you need to or Ricky has something.
No, I think mine were answered by that. Karen, do you have any?
No.
Mary, do you have any?
Not on dispatch, I don't. Sounds like you guys are trying to rectify any glitches you have in the system. We look forward to that. Ricky, can I talk to you about your statistics, your stats for a minute?
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so how many times did you go have a mutual aid with Cal Fire?
For this month?
38. 38?
Yes, ma'am. 38.
Okay. And that's where you picked up the load for Cal Fire and backed them up or responded to a call within their jurisdiction, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And how many times did you go out to State Parks and Recs?
For State Parks this month, we went 19 times.
19 times.
That's including the automatic aid. It is part of the automatic aid agreement.
So it's part of the 38?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so but you were out on the dunes 19 times, right? And you have one rig that can get out on those dunes.
Correct.
Right? And does Cal Fire have a rig that can truck so it can respond out on the dunes? So if the truck is broke, you can't fulfill the mutual aid with State Parks and Recs, right?
Correct.
Okay.
We're getting to a point where that vehicle will eventually become unsafe to respond. That's one of the businesses that I'll be bringing to the fire board to discuss automatic aid out to the dunes to determine what direction we should go.
Okay, so you know that we have this huge chaotic, and you might not agree with me about being chaotic, but you know, this huge event that's coming to town, right?
Huckfest.
You know, and I'm concerned about people's safety. And you get 30,000 people, you know, frantic and all pumped up on their monster drinks and ready just to, you know, have a big old party out in the dunes, right? Who's going to watch out for the safety there? I mean, when one of those big trucks flip into the air and, you know, wipe out, like, you know, a bunch of people and you know, standing around, who's going to respond to those? Is it going to be five cities or is it going to be Cal Fire? Or are you just going to ignore it?
Well, Chief Steffen attended a planning meeting for the Huckfest,
mm-hmm.
and I would like for him to come up and talk a little bit about what came out of that planning meeting.
Okay, and then also, too, is, you know, I look at these things as bleeds in the fire department. You know, these are the Cal Fire's response, constantly responding is a bleed to you, you know, and it's a bleed to the community. The State Parks and Recs has proven to be not the most gracious neighbor, and so now the beach has become a big bleed to your organization, and so I'm trying to kind of capture on how much money your kindness, I mean, is your kindness being taken for weakness, and are you and is the bleed really really bad? So I'm just trying to figure out how much money is being wasted.
Good evening, Chief.
President Guerrero and directors, I'm Randy Steffen with Five Cities Fire. I recently had a meeting with State Parks and Cal Fire in Pismo Beach, I believe it was last week, and the meeting was specifically directed towards the promoter of Huckfest, and since that is a for-profit event by the promoter, So we're waiting now to hear from State Parks as to whether or not they want our services or if they want to just have the one paramedic and one firefighter on their patrol pickup for EMS calls only. What we can offer over the EMS calls is suppression and extrication equipment if it's needed. So we're waiting to hear.
Okay, but you don't particularly see yourselves covering this event. Is that correct? Because people are asking me, well, if they're out on the dunes handling these 30,000-plus people, are they going to be able to handle it in town? And I'm just trying to get that answer.
Yeah, they expect 13,000 people for the Thursday, Friday, Saturday event. And to answer your question, we will not respond out to the dunes on automatic aid that weekend because it is a private event and they've closed the beach unless the promoter accepts a proposal and we're paid for our services for that weekend.
Great. Okay, and I think that that's fair.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, and I only have one more question.
Please, you have the floor.
So let's talk about Strandway, the fire that happened down on Strandway. I actually went down there before the fire because I'd heard that the street had been closed off. Somebody wanted to expand their front yard. It was, you know, dirt.
You're talking about the curve at Utah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. One of the neighbors...
So I found it quite interesting. Yeah. They just...
I was
out
there on the fire.
Took their lawn out further.
Yeah, I was out on the fire, and it really isn't closed off. It has...
Well, I couldn't get my Jeep over that pile of stuff. So.
Well, actually, if there's no pavement under that beach sand, a fire engine wouldn't be able to traverse that. It would be stuck.
Well, how did you get down there since that road's closed off? Because I used to drive down there, and then they
Well, we went... The fire was all the way down at the end of Strand, and it was the second house on the left on Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to get the engines there, but if we had to use that...
So what would happen if one of the four other houses further down into that, which is now a cul-de-sac, without any fire suppression, without an fire extinguisher down there, because you have to go around the circle, and then there's the extinguisher. You guys got to back your truck back up onto the Strand and then come back down around to hook off?
It's very easily moved. It's more of a neighbor with an orange cone, you know, and that's nothing. You know, if it was balusters cemented into the sand, that would be something different.
Well, when I was down there, they had actually taken a dump truck and dumped, like, decomposed granite or something.
Yeah, it's a small pile.
There was a pile in the middle of the road.
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to traverse a fire engine around that corner, so they could put a rock there. It's still the same thing. We can't get an engine to go around that corner.
Okay, so it's not the fact that the homeowner has blocked that street.
No,
it's not the issue. User friendly.
Yeah, it's not suitable base to carry the weight of a fire engine.
Okay, great.
Yep. I have a question because I was understood when we moved down there, we built 35 years ago, that those alleys were to be kept accessible for fire and utility vehicles.
That's what they're for.
And some of our newest neighbors think they own those alleyways and have put decks and everything else out in them. So I've seen it increase just in the last year of a lot of blockage of the streets and stuff. And the rental homes, there's, you know, a couple companies in particular that will allow 8 to 10 vehicles for one house. And what's happening is they're blocking a lot of the roadways.
So Strand has always been a problem.
I think maybe that might be something that we should probably talk to the county about.
Yeah, on a large weekend, just Strand Way itself.
I had to park across my driveway. I had to ask somebody to move so I could get out of my driveway.
Yeah, we carry a lot of hose, but not that much.
That's just been in the last 2 years that's happened.
Yeah, and it's something that's getting worse.
Yeah.
Makes our job harder.
Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Ricky.
Thank you.
Anything else to add?
Well, I would like to just say that we'll go out there and take a look at Strand Way and try to figure out, maybe communicate with a county building official and code enforcement, see what we could do to maybe clean some of that up.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.
And on that, Mr. Ogren and I did contact the County Board of Supervisors about making sure that they were in contact with CAL FIRE to have protection out there many weeks ago. So, thank you. We'll move on to the OCSD operations. Good evening, Tony.
Good evening. Pretty calm, except for the two call-outs. That covers pretty much everything for the previous 2 weeks. The after-hours call-outs were due to, I got a call when I was on call. There was water going down 23rd Street, past Robles, 24th Street. Figured it was a main break. Luckily, it was 1623 23rd Street, the mobile home park there. Actually, they have a 2-inch main that runs through their facility, and that had broke. So it was not us, but it was a few hundred gallons a minute.
So you had to shut off their water, and they called somebody out to fix their problem?
Yes, they took care of the situation. Okay.
And it leached back into the ground and helped Mother Earth, right?
Absolutely.
Unlike other places. Okay, great. Glad to hear it.
Thank you, Tony. Anything to add, Pablo?
Thank you.
No? All right, thank you. Have a good night, Tony. Why don't we take a break? It's 8:32. We'll come back at 8:40. 7:32. Thank you very much. It's not digital clock. I'm not able to read those anymore. The next item is the item number 8, Board of Directors and Outside Committees. We'll start with number 1, which is Director Angelo. Good evening. And your mic's off.
Was this week that we attended the Aurora Grandy meeting, or was it last week? The week before?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I didn't do RAC this week, so I don't have anything.
Director Blackburn?
Okay. Well, Mr. Lee did share a lot of the Zone 1-1-A things that were going on, but I'll just highlight a couple of things that weren't mentioned. For the goat grazing, we did find out at the last meeting that there may be a possible food safety concern with the crops that they are grazing close to, so that will be looked at. They're going to, Public Works is going to be discussing with the farmers what the responsibility is.
The wrong kind of fertilizer, or what's the deal?
No, just being near the goats.
The goats being near.
With it, depending on the crop, too. It depends which crop they're growing and how far away they have to be. So they will be looking into that.
Skip the humor here.
The other thing, but they only have access at certain points and only to do certain things, but that it is private property. The people who live around there do have ownership up to the middle of the creek, and unless they own both sides, and then it's all the way across. So I did just want to bring that to the attention of the public. I did not know that and had walked on the levee before, and so I do apologize to the property owners. So that was for Zone 1-1-A. And then I just wanted to mention a presentation that I went to that Supervisor Ray put on regarding crude oil by rail. And she mentioned a study, or referenced a study called Oil by Rail Safety in California, and it was put on or commissioned by the Governor's Task Force. It was the Interagency Rail Safety Working Group did it. She said that it was a very good read and recommended that we read it, but also she shared 10 local safety concerns, and the conclusion of that is that the rail issues, the safety concerns are critical regardless of whether or not the Phillips 66 project happens or not, because we don't have control over the rail traffic anyway. We don't know what's going through already, and we still won't know exactly even if that project goes through, and there are concerns about the rail cars and about the track. She was looking for access to the information on that and is hoping for some help with funding from the state of California for the local emergency response, because we would be responsible for responding to any incident that happened in our jurisdiction. So it was very interesting, and I know that it was recorded. It was up at the Monarch, Monarch Dunes, thank you. So I believe that there is a recording there, but it's interesting.
Did they talk about the wreck that just happened back east, where the oil cars I think 60 oil cars blew up, or yeah. It was a substantial amount.
I don't think it was.
So
mentioned.
It does happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know it has happened in the past, even in this
yeah.
area.
So. Yeah, there was a big one between here and New Mexico at one time. Mm.
Thank you. I attended the South Slo CSD meeting last Wednesday. There's not really much to report other than we approved the FOG agreement as amended that this board addressed 2 weeks ago. Recapturing the methane off of the biological process that happens at the plant. It should save about $2,000 a month for the sewer plant from what we were spending to PG&E. The gas company noticed that gas consumption was down and sent their crew out twice to see if something was wrong. But no, we just had the boiler running. So that makes it sound like things are going very well. Also, the sort of preliminary bantering about getting a recycled water project moving forward. And I shared Ms. Lucy's directions with the board that regardless of whether or not there is the state funding or federal funding that becomes available, this area is in need of it, of recycled water. And so we need to move forward with the hopes that we will get some assistance, but without the expectations of same, and that we need to be ready to go forward anyway. So that's my report.
Glad to hear the Sand District's doing so well on recycled water.
And running in the black.
Yeah, they could have probably recycled 50,000 gallons this week or last week.
Well, more than that. We're putting out about...
36,000 gallons, excuse me.
Yeah, almost between us and Pismo, it's about 420,000, 450,000 gallons a day that goes out the outfall. So.
Wow. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
I attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee with Director Angelo. We did. We were there. there was a woman who presented on a software program that's being worked out right now where it maps out the entire wells in private and public wells throughout the county kind of into Monterey County. And I found it to be fascinating that, you know, they had quite a bit of layover. So she used the example that, for example, Cal Fire could use this software. They were looking for a fire. As long as they had an address or an APN number, then they could use the software. But it was a multiple overlay of software over software over software over software that could be used in many first responders. But they're still inputting the data, but I found that to be pretty fascinating. There was a lot of discussion on the North County, on the development of the Special Service District and that, on Lopez and other basins in the area.
Ms. White?
Yeah, I got to part of the Zone 3 tech, and it was a major discussion. They're working on the Lopez low-level response plan. And it basically, there was representatives from the agricultural community and the tech people discussing and debating the issues. I don't think any decisions were made, but I think there was possibly some division between agriculture and urban users that may develop, and I hope it doesn't. I think everybody was very reasonable, but I could see some questions in some farmers' eyes, and it has to do with surplus water. So we'll wait and see. And Mr. Ogren may have a lot more information than I had.
Certainly, President Guerrero, members of the board. With the low reservoir release plan, this last round of discussions, and there's been a little bit of email since the TAC meeting, has been to try to focus in on how fast does agriculture want the water that might be available? Because from a municipal standpoint, The target, which includes what your board considered a few meetings ago, is to make sure that that water supply can get out 3 years or 4 years to start stretching it out further. The response from Ag is that it doesn't really benefit them in order to stretch out the water supply because it would become such a small quantity that they're not going to be able to produce crops with it. So it looks like, you know, versus in comparison to municipalities wanting stretching it out for 4 years, it looks like if this drought persists, they're going to want to front load it so that they can run crops and take the risks. And if the drought continues, then they'll do whatever dry land farming that they can do. So the concerns that Director White was really speaking to is how do we incorporate that into the LRRP and kind of make sure that that's done right. And so, you know, the group has been doing a bunch of edits, and it'll be on the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting next week for the introduction of the public review draft, and then to the Board of Supervisors, hopefully in December, then for adoption.
Great. Thank you.
One thing I thought was interesting was the question came up again of what do we do if it rains? And you don't need a low-level response plan. And
well, you don't need it this year. I think you keep developing it because this is going to be a recurring cycle.
Yeah, I was going to say you make it as a part of the total package for when it does happen again. You don't have to create another whole document.
Right.
But I thought it was, what do we do if it rains? And it's going to.
Well, we hope so. All right, with that, we'll move to item number 9, which is the consent agenda. And I will note that item B is the review and approval of amended cash disbursements.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, Ms. Lucy, second it. We'll take a roll call vote.
I'm sorry, President Guerrero, did you check to see if there's public comment on this?
Is there public comment on this? Nope. Okay. Then can I get a roll call vote, Marie?
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
President Guerrero?
Yes. Carries by a vote of 5-0. We'll move on to item number 10, which is the business items. We'll take public comment on this time on those and the special presentations. Good evening again, Ms. Tacker.
Will I get to speak to the
hearing? The
hearing
item? Yes.
Okay. So, very quickly, I don't have much here. President Guerrero, your report on the South San District and the continued savings that's going on there, I don't always attend those meetings, mainly kind of quick going because they're very short, and it's a long distance for me to come. But I do follow the minutes, and the meetings are lasting barely an hour, if an hour. I think the last one was under 30 minutes or 45 minutes. And it occurs to me that you could actually save more money if you had one meeting a month and consolidated the activities, cost savings. Like I said, I don't have much more. That was the only thing that really struck me. And I will say, because I didn't speak to the consent calendar and the cash disbursements, that I noticed that Mr. Ogren's pay with PERS is more than your five employees who are not management again. And I think you need to look at that and realize that every dollar counts. And I'll look forward to that budget adjustment coming or quarterly review coming. But I don't know how the district continues to sustain itself with that. The last thing I had was the purchase of the truck, and maybe I just missed it in the staff report. What is the cumulative total of interest that the district will pay with that agreement? So just hope Mr. Ogren can highlight that when he gets to that item. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. If you review the South Slo has considered going to one meeting a month, but because of the pending increasing amount of policy decisions need to be made with things that are going to be happening, we've declined to do that at this time. Although definitely, except for executing the FOG agreement, which had some time limitations, last meeting would have been canceled. We'll move on to item number 10A, which is the submittal for approval recommendations to approve a resolution to purchase a multi-purpose utility vehicle, amount of $55,625. B, approve financing with DeLage Landon.
Is that a typo? It's DeLange.
Okay, i.e. Rabobank, in an amount not to exceed $40,000. And C, approve a budget adjustment in the amount of $65,299.61. There was an extensive staff report. I think this starts at page 29 of 113 pages in the staff report. So.
President Guerrero, I'll keep my comments much shorter than the actual staff report, primarily because the item was in front of your board in July. At that point in time, we did look at detailed interest calculations. And it was referred back to the Audit and Finance Committee, where we looked at those calculations yet again, sure that the specifications would meet his needs. And that is going to provide a few thousand dollars of savings in comparison to the numbers that were previously provided to you. Also, in accordance with your purchasing policies, the resolution that is attached was developed, and it has the findings in it that your purchasing policies require your board to make. So we wanted to make sure that we're really clean on purchasing policies and put together the resolution. The proposal from DeLage Landon Robobank is substantially similar to the one that you viewed last time. It was extended to September 30th.
Correct.
And the interest rate is just slightly less. As a result, the direction that we're seeking is that that the president is authorized to sign and then is also authorized to execute actual documents, provided that they're in substantially in conformance with the financing bid that we were receiving. And then with respect to the budget adjustment itself, that's all focused in on the governmental fund and the purchase of the vehicle, because the water and the wastewater funds already have the amounts budgeted for monthly rental, if you will, which are going to be much more than what we need in order to cover the cost of the purchase. The entire on a monthly basis, the debt service and the depreciation and everything is going to run between $950 and $1,000 a month. And that will make both the debt payments to the lender as well as reimburse the governmental fund for the down payment. So there's a number of details that I needed to cover in that budget adjustment, but those cover all of the necessary changes to the budget. Because it's a relatively lengthy number of different recommendations, if your board is so inclined, it might be just simply a motion to approve staff recommendations. But with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
My only thought is when you were talking about the budget adjustments, I would like to see, as we move forward, when we deal with the pro forma, we get that back on track, is to depreciation actually be budgeted into and placed into an account, so the next time when we have vehicle replacements or capital equipment replacements,
yes,
those funds are available to use at that time.
Well, and I think that recovering depreciation charges is important. When I looked at the June 2013 financial statements, the prior fiscal year, but obviously more work to be done on that.
Mr. Ogren, okay, are you done? Matt?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I'll pass the floor.
And we're looking at a 5.04% interest on the 5-year, correct?
Yes.
And is that fixed? Because
Yes.
Okay, because it says interest rate lock, and then it says, you know, that it has the right to adjust, determine a new fixed interest rate. So it was like a conundrum.
Yeah, if we don't execute by September
30th.
Yes.
So they're saying if after 9:30, then, but there's a lock on that 5%.
That's the purpose of this, yes.
Right, which is relatively competitive for car loans. I've seen them as high
as
9.
Relatively, especially on heavier equipment. You know, there's car loans out there that manufacturers put together that are less than that, but that tends to be part of the incentive.
Right.
You know, as opposed to the low bidding process.
So I think that we've regurgitated this enough. As a board member, I'd be happy with staff recommendations. Because, I mean, we really have hammered this one to death.
We spent a lot of time. Does anybody have any other questions, or is there a motion to approve staff recommendations?
I move that we approve staff recommendations for 10A.
Second.
Item 10A.
All right. Marie, if you'll do a roll call vote, please.
Who was the second?
Ms. Here. Blackburn. Oh, sorry. Ms. White.
It was a mess.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
President Guerrero?
Yes. That motion was carried by a vote of 5-0. Thank you, everybody.
And I want to thank Tony for being so patient with the process.
Take care of that new truck. We'll move on.
I hope you get to drive it.
We'll move on to item 10B. This starts on page 42 of the agenda. This is submittal for approval, a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute reimbursement agreements for costs associated with utility service requests. I'll turn the floor over to Pavo. He'll probably cover my thoughts before we get there.
But. Okay, President Guerrero, members of the board again. On this particular item, the resolution, I worked with our district council here because what I quickly identified is that lacking this particular type of a reimbursement agreement, when we have development or customers who want to connect, who are relatively consistent with your ordinances, which identify that the intent is that the development or those who are seeking the application pay for the full cost. It's simply we want to make sure that that happens on a timely basis and that we're not at risk, especially in the event that the developer or the property owner decides to defer the development or maybe abandon it altogether. Because we are at risk if we put forth a lot of time, legal consulting and staff time, and don't have it this type of a reimbursement agreement approved. So it's pretty standard for the industry and recommend approval.
Do you know if this exists in other local communities?
Certainly. In fact, we used the boilerplate from another local governmental agency and modified it for the specifics of Oceano and the Oceano ordinances.
Do you know, and I'm sure that it's happened, I mean, about the fiscal impact? I didn't note a note of fiscal impact here, and I can imagine a lot of hours being expended, such as the Kenmar Gardens, item number 11, already a significant number of hours have been extended.
Yeah, and I'll just speak more to that in the subsequent item, but the important point there is I have not spent a lot of time on the Kenmar Gardens item so far. I mean, it has been maybe 4 or 5 hours worth of work, but intentionally did a relatively quick research, an overall research in order to get it in front of your board, because that's a trickier item than most. But if in moving forward with Kenmar, yeah, that's an example of one that can become very complicated very quickly if it does move forward.
Mary's got more experience. You've been around longer than the rest of us.
Thanks.
On the board.
But I've been around longer too, buddy.
But what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's actually good practice, and it's being a good steward to the people's money. So I'd like to actually make a motion that we adopt agenda item number 10B, which is to execute reimbursement agreements for costs associated with utility service requests.
Second.
Yeah. All right. And just to make sure I have a clarification, and this would be for the approval of a resolution?
Correct.
Okay. Marie, you'll do a roll call vote. Ms. Angelo was the second.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
President Guerrero?
Yes. That would pass by a vote of 5-0. Thank you very much for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the hearing item, which is item number 11. This is a discussion for staff direction on the application for water service by Kenmar Gardens Mobile Home Park. I do note there was quite a bit of documentation, including some prior agreements that had been made that I have some questions about, because this, I'll turn the floor over to you and see if they...
Certainly. Again, President Guerrero, members of the board. So I handed out a hard copy of a PowerPoint and a couple of additional slides, which I want to work through as opposed to using the audiovisual endpoint, if you will. That's Kenmore Gardens, just to the north of the fields. And the exclamation point is a Google-inserted item, but the park obviously extends all the way to South Halcyon Road and on Pike up to the north. So that's the location. The yellow marker toward the left corner is the intersection where our infrastructure ends. It's not at the exact point of that marker, but that's the intersection where it ends. And then the triangle sort of shaped lot below Kenmore Gardens is the one that Coker Ellsworth has been working on getting his entitlements, and of which your board at the last meeting extended his will serve a letter again. And the importance of the vicinity map is relationship to the discussion of, in moving forward with Kenmore Gardens, does your board seek the pleasure of the line extension so that we can actually start extending the infrastructure? It will be necessary no matter what for the Coker Ellsworth development. It's also in close proximity then to the other mobile home parks that are currently receiving water being wheeled through the city of Arroyo Grande. And might the extension of the infrastructure also then be able to get us to hook those two mobile home parks up directly to our water system and no longer wheel? So those are certainly the purpose of the vicinity map then is to show the proximity of Kenmore Gardens with the Coker Ellsworth development with where our existing infrastructure ends. Turning then to the next one on the hard copy of the PowerPoint, I laid out the fee estimates that I developed based on the ordinance. And then in a larger version then, I provided your board with that as well as the comparison to what some of the other existing mobile home parks paid in around 2009 when they were annexed into the district boundaries. An important point of clarification is this is all, the Kenmore Gardens is currently within the district boundaries. I provided in the fee estimate for Kenmore Gardens the details associated with what section and subsection of Ordinance 2006-1 relate to the different fees. And the only thing that I districts ordinance. And the bottom line is that the cost per unit for Kenmore Gardens for just the fees is about $6,623. That's essentially equivalent to the fee that a single-family residential unit would pay as well. The comparison then to Grand Mobile Manor and Halcyon Estates is that when they were already connected to Arroyo Grande system at the time of annexation in 2009, their agreement with Arroyo Grande was expiring, and Arroyo Grande had indicated they would no longer provide water to them. And so then that's when they sought water from the district. And at that point in time, I incorporated the LAFCO staff report in there because there's a lot of really good history in there, and we'll be prepared to respond to board questions. But it's clear from that Grand Mobile Manor and Halcyon Estates sort of got a break, and that is that, for example, Grand Mobile Manor had 34 units, but rather than being charged 34 equivalent dwelling units as the ordinance calls for, it was based on estimated demands in water, and those EDUs were dropped down to 12. Likewise, in Halcyon Estates, who used more water on a unit-by-unit basis than Grand Mobile Manor did, obviously, those 25 equated to about 15 EDUs in terms of acre feet per year. Those acre feet per year, you can see on that top line in the comparison, Grand Mobile Manor's 34 units, they asked for 4 acre feet. Halcyon Estates, their 25 units, they asked for 5 acre feet of water. So the calculations in 2009 were driven based on the estimated water demand and not strictly in accordance Well, not based on the calculations in the ordinance. The ordinance does provide your board with identifying special circumstances and modifying this fee schedule. So the actual fees charged to Grand Mobile Manor and Halcyon Estates were in accordance with your board's discretionary ability to modify those calculations. But that's what happened at the time. The calculations were modified in order to reflect EDUs, equivalent dwelling units, based on water demand, as opposed to one site equals one EDU.
And so if I understand, I don't mean to interrupt. So we would treat this as a new hookup, mm-hmm. basically. And so they got a break. And that was one of the things that jumped out at me before, was they seemed to have gotten a substantial break, and probably this property owner over at Kenmar is going...
Donations through LAFCO on fees are binding, because that is really the discretion of your board still at this time. In contrast, there was another condition, which is when they do connect, they no longer get to use their well. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that is binding, because LAFCO does have the authority over services and functions and those kind of details. So the idea that when they, I don't, and this is a thought that I explored as I was reading the research material, is Ken Mars is clearly in their letter indicating their concern because their well level is dropping. And so the natural thing, and you know, going through options and thinking about options, is, would it be possible to give an emergency connection for the drought? And the answer is no, because the LAFCO conditions were, once they connect, they no longer use their well. So there's not an emergency option out there. And I do think that that's binding, because LAFCO has authority over services and functions. And I talked to David Church, with his executive director, and if we were not to conform to that condition, his concern would be that he would have to have hearings for a deannexation. So we wouldn't want to go there. But with respect to fee setting, your ordinance, and you know, your board really has the discretion on how you choose to charge fees and those kind of things. So I think it is not only to be expected, but understandable if Kenmar Garden says, hey, you know, you gave them a break, can you give us a break? Partly because the ordinance provides for that, that they do have, if they feel that the conditions that are being set down in a will serve letter are not reasonable, they have a chance to appeal it to your board. But also, as mobile home parks and those that tend to be less lucrative and less money, you know, they're going to be looking at affordability issues. But certainly it's within your discretion of your board to charge them the full boat on the fees, as well as to require the line extension to the properties. And my thought at this point in time is that, in working with legal counsel, what is it that we might be able to work on with Kenmar Gardens? It certainly seems beneficial to be able to get the line extension done. It's beneficial because the current dead end right now only serves about three different properties, and we have to flush water every month for water quality concerns. And if the line is extended and we have other users at the end, it's going to put the line extension. I came up just today with some of those cost estimates because I met with USDA today and talked to them about what's the possibility of being able to get funding from USDA to do the line extension. It was a very good conversation. They have low interest rate loans over a 40-year period. When the federal budget gets reapproved, federal fiscal year starts in October, the possibility of some grant money exists. And then the other possibility is developing a line extension project, not just in cooperation with the mobile homes and Coker Ellsworth, but also combining it with the generator project. And so that was the sort of line of discussions that I had with USDA today. And, you know, I'd be far from saying that there's certainty in being able to take that path, but I definitely think it's worth exploring some more. Timeliness is always a concern, because if Kenmar Gardens well really does go dry, how fast can we do a line extension versus a connection to Arroyo Grande? In some ways, that's the risk of Kenmar Gardens, because Arroyo Grande has already indicated it's going to cost them $25,000 to connect. And so we could even, I think, work on an agreement that says, this is what we're going to do, and if you run out of water before we can get it done, well, it's going to cost you $25,000, but you can do the connection to Arroyo Grande for the emergency purpose. So I think that there's some very good benefit that we can develop by working with Kenmore Gardens and bringing Coker Ellsworth into the room as well, provided that Kenmore Gardens wants to work with us. And if they're not inclined to work with us in trying to develop that, then your board still has the authority to require them to do the entire line extension and to pay all of the fees. I wanted to get it on the agenda, and I wanted to be able to have this general discussion in order to get initial feedback from your board. But obviously, we're not going to be setting any conditions in will serve letters today. And with that, I'd be glad to answer questions.
My concerns were you know, just trying to have parity, and I didn't catch the discussion in 2009 that they had chose not to. If I'm Kenmore Gardens, I probably say, let's wait and see if it rains this year and if there's still water in the well. But
well, and I think that that's an important reason why the reimbursement agreement is really important, mm-hmm. because the time in order to develop these type of
for the infrastructure costs, which would probably take years for us to recoup, I'm probably going to need them to pay those. That's my initial thoughts. Of course, that's not having a lot of numbers in front of me either.
That's right. And so the USDA loan is something that can help bridge, you know, and provide it so that there's not a negative impact on our mm-hmm. existing customers. One of the things that the USDA representatives made clear today, and I understood it going in, is that if we develop an agreement that they help with the financing of this, we can obligate the property owners. We can obligate Kenmore. We can obligate Coker Ellsworth. We can obligate the other two mobile home parks to help with the revenue stream to pay back the debt. We nevertheless have to obligate our credit to pay back USDA. So it's our obligation to make sure we collect from Kenmore Gardens and the others, because USDA is just going to say, look, if you don't collect from them, that's your problem. You still have to pay us back. So in the documents itself and, you know, the credit for the loan, it's the full faith and credit of our ratepayers. Mm-hmm. And so we have to, and that's, again, why these deals tend to be complicated, is because we have to then make sure that we can enforce against the property owners and recover the money that we need to recover as well.
I think just on my last thought, there's some sensitivity to the ratepayers and definitely from this board about, you know, subsidizing development in other communities. You know, we don't want to spend hundreds of thousands of our dollars for
right.
to support Arroyo Grande. So.
Well, but again, this is in,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is in Oceano's boundaries now.
Right. Okay, good. So I was just saying there's always been some concern of Oceano subsidizing other communities.
This is part of Oceana's Community Services District.
But similarly, you know, the concern of existing ratepayers subsidizing the cost of new development, a.k.a. Coker Ellsworth's new development, but even the existing development that is on their own, you know, Kenmore Gardens is on their wells and stuff, that's a risk that they took when they developed, that their well is now may not last forever. And so that risk is appropriately on them and not on our existing ratepayers.
What is the binding situation that these remain mobile home parks?
Oh, in terms of the binding land use decisions?
Yeah.
So when I read through the documents, my impression is that it's not binding.
Director White, I recently dealt with a conversion of a mobile home park in regards to the Port San Luis Harbor District, and I will tell you I've done some fair amount of research over a number of years related to that, and mobile homes are protected by a very specific civil statute, the mobile home residency law, and it is designed to protect mobile home residents in a very strong capacity because they tend to be lower income folks, and oftentimes mobile homes are the only affordable areas to live near a town at all. And so concerns that you have about a conversion or a closure, you can mitigate those in your mind quite a bit because it is so incredibly expensive and burdensome to close or convert a park that the chances that would happen to any of these parks is highly unlikely for many, many years.
Also, the county, I don't think, is going to risk losing 100 plus homes that are considered affordable housing, you know, because the federal government does watch how much affordable housing you do have in your area, particularly if you're applying for any block grant funds or anything like that. Some cities have opted out to even provide affordable housing, you know, and just don't even apply for it. And I think Arroyo Grande has some odd policies around affordable housing, and these three entities fall into that. I did sit on the board when this first came up, when the first two wells for each park on each side went bad. And there was a lot of discussion, and in fact, one of the directors that sat on the board at that time lives in one of the parks. And so there was a lot of pushing back and forth, of trying to basically get it for free. But so that's how come it's so low, because she was able to push through those low fees. I actually think that we should put service on that side of the street, basically. The piping down, as most people have seen, down the Pike Lane, Arroyo Grande has put all new piping. Unfortunately, we didn't have a good enough relationship to maybe lay some of our, what was it, 7-8 years ago. And so the two wells on each side of his park had gone bad, and so he was keeping his fingers crossed that his well was going to hold out with a bad well on each side of you. And so I think the luck has probably ran out, and also, too, with that new development coming in on the other side, I don't see any way but to try to work with them, and if they want to have water service on that side of Halcyon, then...
Or he was hoping the Cokers would pay for the line.
You know, it's just like if I had a piece of property on one side of the street and the water line was on the other side of the street, I'd have to pay for it to come across the street to me. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to pay another million to get it to go up to the house. So, yeah, I think you're on the right track, is to try to work with the property owners and get those permanent lines in.
Okay. Karen or... Jennifer, have any? Or?
I live awfully close to this.
I think you're within the 500
we're
feet.
Voting.
We're not voting on anything. We're just receiving information.
As a little reference, the intersection where our yellow marker is to Halcyon Road is just over 700 feet.
Oh, so if I 500 feet, I'm away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I would like to see the line extended. I really would, whether we can afford it, whether it can, however the deal can be worked. And I do think that if it becomes a deal, I think Coker Ellsworth also needs to, you know, he's got the plans approved for his development. He's got a will serve letter from us. And, I mean, he has lots of plans to go with it. It's not something he's just proposed. It's something they've done a lot of work on. And I think somehow he needs to be a part of this, certainly. Somehow.
I think we might have missed our opportunity a couple weeks ago when we approved his extension.
No.
You know, that will serve letter had some really broad general conditions associated with it. I have a little bit of a concern, and yet at the same time, it's clear that he is... for off-site improvements. The will serve letter is sufficiently that says that engineering needs to be done, but the details of the conditions on Mr. Ellsworth have not yet been set.
Well, how else would he get water from us if this line is not punched through?
You know, and that's right. The line extension has to happen in order for him to get it done. I think what Mr. President Guerrero was probably looking to is the scenario that sometimes one developer will sit back and wait for somebody else mm-hmm. to do the line extension.
Yeah.
But we also have rules in our ordinances where whoever goes first has rights to reimbursement. So I think there's a number of things. Again, deep complications of this, which will require me to work more closely with our legal counsel. But my general sense right now is that we can capture Mr. Ellsworth as well.
All right.
Don't want to, I know your board discussion is continuing, but don't want to forget about public comment as well.
Yeah, and I do have that in mind. And Ms. Blackburn, I think, and Ms. Angela might have some questions or thoughts.
Well, I agree. I think we need to put that in. And I'm looking at the overall size of the Kenmore parcel. It's almost twice as big as the other one. So that's an advantage for us. If we're going to run the lines, we have more client to help pay for things. So, yeah, I'd be all for it.
Is this yours?
Mm-hmm. You don't drive perfectly
right. Straight. Jennifer, do you have comments?
My initial thoughts are that it would be good to get the dead end out of Halsey, and if it's being extended anyway for Coker Ellsworth, then I would be interested in the cost share with the. Those questions were mostly answered. So.
All right. So we'll take public comment at this time. Ms. Tacker, do you have any public comment on this matter?
Can I ask Mr. Ogren just one more quick question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Pavel, on the map, the large map here, if you're coming, I guess, southbound down the pike right here.
Yes.
And you cross over, it goes right into the park, into the next park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it says here the pike, and so I guess is it not lined up, or because that's because I've done it 100 times. I've gone in that park because I used to know a person that lived in there.
I got a question after she's done.
So well, it's I guess I'm a little confused because this isn't a public road. This is actually the park.
Yeah, and this comes off of a Google map.
Oh.
So okay. They're going to identify, you know, generally what they're seeing. I found it kind of interesting because the number of times that I've gone east
today,
yeah,
from Halsey, from Ladue up to the Pike, and traffic was just
it's been ugly. I've been going around it.
And are they going to re-asphalt that? Because that's Oceano.
It's a Roy Grandy.
Yeah, I don't know who owns the road there.
It'll have to be AG, yes, but they are doing the road repair.
The Halcyon owns. To the other side of the eucalyptus trees. We own that space, and from there on, it's a Roy Grandy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the pipes are going, so the fiber optics are going in on the Oceano side.
Yeah.
Well,
so I'm just hoping that they patch the roads better than
The deal with roads are you rarely ever see a road that down the middle of the road is one agency on one side and another agency on another side. And what the county typically requires is that whoever the city is takes the entirety of the road. I don't know when this all happened. It could have been a long time ago, and so you have unique situations there. But typically, you would expect that the city of Rio Grande is responsible for the entire road right there.
Until it gets into Grover.
Yeah. And then it comes down to what are Rio Grande's trench repair standards. Certainly, everybody requires it to be smoothed off and, you know, cleaned up really well. Different jurisdictions, like the county, you have to not just repair the trench, but at least a half a lane of traffic. Mm-hmm. And then if you zigzag through the lane, you might have to repair the entire lane of traffic. But the bumpiness that we see right now are cold patches, and we should be able to expect that that's going to be smoothed out and cleaned up before they're done.
Okay.
Yeah, I am very sure that road belongs to a Roy Grandy. And a Roy Grandy tried to force Halcyon to take out the eucalyptus trees on the Halcyon side. And the survey showed that they came over 7 feet into the roadway on the Roy Grandy side. And so the road actually is the sidewalks in front of all those people's houses is road. And our property line is on the north side of our trees. They could not force us to take the trees out.
But when they ran over the fire hydrant on the corner of 23rd and the Pike on the school side, it was OCSD who repaired that fire hydrant.
So the ability to reach each of those coaches at the $6,600 is up to the property owner. They're not individual parcels. And then would rent control prevent them from recouping that cost to each property owner? Jeff, Pavo knows.
Well, that certainly might be a challenge that is a challenge of the property owner.
Right, right. So when you're talking about any consideration, you're really only talking about the property owner. And could they recoup from the tenant? And that's what the legal question is. Can it be recovered, you know, some sort of internal assessment or in the rent? And then if it is recoverable through the rent or assessment, then you would have the opportunity to consider that and say, hey, we don't want to hit these lower income people as hard. So that's something I would like to see you further investigate, how that landowner hooks the tenants. Additionally, we don't want to see them use a lot of water. Apparently they're using almost 9 acre feet a year now. Is there a legal way for the district to require retrofit of the trailers before you serve them so that they are using that much less? Because if any of the coaches are over 1994, older than 1994, they're using high flow fixtures. So you'd want to see less water used. Additionally, with regard to if you were to pick up the other parks as part of your service rather than wheeling through Arroyo Grande, does that then reduce a wheeling charge for those ratepayers over there? So there's a lot, obviously, to consider, and I think they're all really good questions. And just for a little bit of correction in the history, Carol Henson was elected in 2010 and resigned in 2011. So the annexation in 2009 and the consideration of the other parks was long before she came on your board.
With what we're seeing in some of the other low coastal communities like Cayucas and Morro Bay, where there's very little landscaping, similar types of demographics. So there might be some water conservation potential there, but certainly at less than, you know, 0.2 acre feet per year, that number is not indicating an excessive amount of usage by the tenants of the mobile home park. In the question of single meter versus multiple meters, I think what we would want to do is to set a single meter requirement. That question has actually come up with one of the other states where the owner is having some of the challenges of collecting rent against the individual tenants. But the problem with doing individual meters is that we would become responsible for the infrastructure within the park, and it would not be advisable to be responsible for the infrastructure inside the park. So the middle ground that might be considered, if it ever comes up, is to have an agreement with the park that says we're going to read the main meter. As a convenience for you, we can read the individual meters and we can bill them individually. If we have any water losses between the main meter and the individual meter, then the park owner is responsible for paying for those water losses. And if there's any infrastructure issues beyond the main meter and inside the park itself, and if we have to go and work on things, then it's on a time and material basis, or they can call a plumber out. So in the event that an owner really does want us to read the individual meters, we can accommodate with a well-structured agreement. And so those are the conclusions of my comments on questions.
Okay. Any other comments, or shall we move on? We'll move on. Why don't we move item 13, which is the closed session. We'll do the any received communications, future agenda items now. Are there any received communications, Pavo, or late received communications? Okay. We will, as far as future agenda items, we did mention a couple. I did want to bring up the pro forma idea again.
So on the pro forma idea, out of our directors, a couple of directors have done their homework on the strategic planning and the spending of the $100, and I would be more than glad to follow up with the other directors in order to make sure that we have all five. And that was from the is either a letter or a policy platform on the status, because at this point in time where the county feels like the Army Corps of Engineers is starting to finally move on it, and it really has been an extended period of time. But if they're moving forward, the idea of sending a good letter of support that this really needs to get done because we're the community that gets impacted, and it does relate to emergency response issues that we have. I think that developing some sort of a policy platform is a good idea, because then it also, if a good letter is sent first, and then if for whatever reason the permitting stalls, then being able to follow it up with a more stern letter would be appropriate as well. So what would do there is to work with one of our, I think appropriate would be with the Zone 1 and 1A committee then, and to develop something to bring back on a future agenda item as well.
Sounds great. All right. With nothing further, we'll move to item number 13, which is pursuant to government code section. Oh, go ahead.
Are you doing future agenda items?
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Okay.
I apologize. Go ahead, Mary.
So you wanted to... I agree we should send a letter of support for the zone, but what we're dancing around is we should send a letter to the sheriff's department too, because we're dancing around what's really happening in the creek. And if you live here, you'll understand what's happening in the creek, and it's a big party down there, and it's not safe. If county workers are going in twos down into the creek, how are us residents supposed to feel safe? You know, and so we keep dancing around this issue of whose responsibility is it to clean the debris and the clothes and the garbage and all this stuff, not to mention the populations that are living down in the creek, you know, so.
And they're not just in the creek. They're over there on the other side of the railroad tracks.
They're everywhere. They're underneath
by the
underpasses.
Shed. They're over by the sanitation plant.
And so the sheriff's department, we should definitely send a strong letter to the sheriff's department that, you know, I don't want to call it a complete failure, but something has got to break here, because it is getting to be a very, very bad situation. And in fact, my nephew ran into two people who were... So yesterday I was down on Lake Street, and some transient people had cut down a tree and were dragging it down the middle of the street. And they took it to one of the wood dealers, right? And then they came back with a case of beer, which, joy, joy, but whose tree was that? You know, I mean, they cut down a tree and was dragging it down the middle of the street. So it's gotten really bad, and it's out of control. And I understand that, you know, economics plays into it, but I think lack of presence, you know, complacent, you know, ordinance people, it all contributes to it. So at what point does somebody have to die before somebody takes notice of this? You know,
well,
I hate to see that happen.
And the habitat, even, which many of the resource agencies are seeking to protect, are being impacted as
well.
Yeah, they are.
I know the poor little frogs now got toilet paper on them. You know, so can we send a letter to the sheriff's department that says,
"So,
hey,
again,
hello, can we send a letter to Parkins?
Sure.
You know, so, and to say, you know, look, dude, you need to, you know, pay attention to what's going on, because we're not being properly served. I'm sorry, we're just not being properly served. And then also, too, is I would like to keep the Five Cities Fire Authority dispatch on the agenda.
Yeah.
You know.
Karen,
and it's mainly for the firefighters, mm-hmm. to keep that issue to the forefront
not just put it on one director, but to bring it to everybody's attention. And then also, too, is the Huck Fest is going to have an impact on Oceano. The roads are going to be clogged up. You know, nobody's going to say, hey, don't go out of your house from Thursday to Sunday. Don't dare try to get on the beach with your annual pass because you're not going to make it. You know, and the people who live on the strands, you know, either leave your house for the week or lock in because you're not going to be able to move your cars. So there is this horrible, bad impact that's going to happen to the area. And I kind of feel like, you know, as the community service district, we should be in the forefront, even if it's a meaningless letter. You know, it's, we're on the record of saying, no, we don't think State Parks and Recs is handling this event properly. And
at Pier Avenue, who have to turn around.
It's a mess.
That was what the problem was last time, and there is no solution to that. Because it's not the people that have the tickets, it's the people who want to go there who do not have the tickets, or who want to go somewhere else. But I really think, you know, they claim that the traffic is mitigated by their planning, but I do not believe that. And I do not, because of two things. Number one, turning around on Pier Avenue. Number two, all the people who live on the strand where the people park and then go down the beach with someone else. How many people can you get in a camper? Beaches and Parks says it's 3.8 people. I could get 12 or 14 people in a camper if I tried hard, and probably 200 cases of beer. On a toy hauler without the toys.
So, you know, the impacts relating to Zone 1 and 1A and this sort of umbrella emergency responsibility that we have with the district, mm-hmm. I certainly know how to take next steps on that. With respect to Huckfest itself, I guess I'm seeking a little bit more direction from your board on do you want me to work with anybody in particular in drafting something up to come back on your board's agenda? You know, obviously the formal public comment period on the draft environmental document is mm-hmm. going to be over. And I'm not sure exactly what our formal role is on this because we don't have roads. And in terms of the understanding of the real issue is the immediate emergency response, Five Cities Fire, you know, clearly addressed that earlier from their perspective, which is that they're not going to provide the mutual aid response unless they have an agreement because it's essentially a private event during Huckfest. So, you know, I can work with any one or two of your board members in order to, you know, draft some follow-up correspondence and put it up on a subsequent agenda.
Maybe I'll be happy to work with you.
Or I was going to say maybe it's something we need to do individually rather than because how are we going to say what impact, specific impacts?
Yeah. I think that individual letters is probably more appropriate considering the services and powers of the Community Services District. But again, it's sort of your board's pleasure on this one.
Well, I think individual.
Or 13.
Because 13. Their overflow parking is over 2.5 miles away. So who's gonna park an overflow 2.5 miles away? Come on, let's get real here. You know, I mean, some of us put in on the CEQA, but it doesn't matter. You know, they're gonna make it sound rosy and pretty. They're gonna cut down they're gonna cut their profits. Well, there was 40,000 last year, right? And they're saying they're gonna bring it down to 20,000.
13,000. That's considering 3.8
it does have an
people
impact.
Per camper.
The Strand is part of Oceano. That neighborhood will be shut down. Pier Street is part of Oceano. That you can't make a U-turn now. How can you make a U-turn when it's backed up to Highway 1? I mean, backed up to the 101. You know, and the Clam Fest is happening that weekend. So it's just like a disaster waiting to happen, and I think we should be on the record at least sending a letter saying, we have some concerns here, fellas. And you could send it to Brett.
Access to your facilities, hydrants, lift station.
So, on the future agenda item,
Yeah, letter to state parks.
By the way,
you
got, you're supposed to get your tickets ahead of time for Pismo.
Should
for
we?
The Clam Festival. They're selling tickets for that now.
Yeah. I'd recommend that we bring it to the advisory council and suggest that they send a letter, as I think that that's their...
Oceana Advisory Council?
Mm-hmm.
When's the next meeting?
I think they have sent a letter.
I don't know. I know that Linda has been communicating with
well, I can
state
certainly
parks,
communicate with the advisory council. And again, with the pleasure of your board, I can work with one or two of your board members to draft something for a future agenda as well.
Yeah.
And I think your next advisory meeting is the fourth Monday, so that'll
yes.
make the 22nd.
Yes,
of
it is the 22nd yeah. at yeah. 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith there, so I already went to the advisory body. I heard Parks and Recs come in and say, you know what, we don't really care about your concerns. You know, Huckfest came in and said, you know what, we don't care.
We got it under control.
We got it under control. We got 30 porta potties. What more do you want, lady?
Well,
so,
and
you
know. One thing I think is that if this Huckfest causes the challenges that the last Huckfest caused, then it will be the last Huckfest. And she can't get out of her home with a car all day long, and her daughter can't get to her. It's scary. And there's not, it's not within our jurisdiction to really do anything. I mean, we, you know, other than, as she said, saving our hydrants and our lift station. What if the lift station goes down?
Okay, so getting back to our future agenda items.
Yeah,
it seems to me that we need to, I need to get a little bit of direction from the board on the future agenda item.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to know what happens on the dispatch for the five cities, so if we could just keep that on the agenda and ask the fire department to continue to come in with Director White.
Yeah. Now that we have an agenda for a 12-hour meeting.
And the letter to the Zone 11A asking for an accounting of
the funds.
The assessments. And then our work's done.
Don't they have a budget for the years? Don't they have budgets for every year?
Yes.
I don't know. They should.
We'll find out.
Yeah. And you're going to keep us posted on this, right?
On the Huckfest. All right.
Okay.
Then item number 13, pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6, conference with labor negotiators. The agency designated representative, Vice President Mary Lucy, employee organization, Service Employees International Union 620.
President Guerrero, you want to see if there's any public comment on
any
closed session? Any
public on the closed session? All right. Seeing none, we will adjourn. It's 9 o'clock. Not adjourn, I'm sorry, we will adjourn to closed session, I should say.
Hi, we're not done. Stupid. We don't want to bring it back. Oh, you guys. The sky is falling.
We're going to have two heavy metal bands down there. I'm going to have to leave town.
Jeff will be there. All right, we'll call this meeting back to order. Oceana Community Service District is 9:24 p.m. We've returned from closed session, and there is no reportable action. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I move.
I so move.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Everybody,
aye.
Have a good night. Aye.